Well, greetings from church at five. I don't often get to the 7 o'clock service because I'm normally busy mopping the floor. I finish mopping the floor by now normally, but at 7 o'clock I'm normally mopping the floor down at the Green Man. And if you've never been to church at five and you've always wondered what it's about, please do feel free to pop down and see us anytime you like at the Green Man. It does what it says on the tin. It is church and it's at 5 o'clock. So you know where and when. And we had a great time tonight. Jan was preaching tonight and he drew the short straw. We are doing a series on, what are we doing a series on, Jan? Sermon on the Mount, that's the one. We're doing a series on the Sermon on the Mount. So last week, Liz had murder, Jan had adultery, and next week, Peter has got divorce. And so we got into the whole talking about sex and lust and porn, and the service just went on and on, didn't it? People were just really engaging with it. It was really, really great. And do you know, we've seen God do some amazing stuff down at church at five. Just last week, prayed for a lady whose arm hadn't been moving for about 3 weeks. Literally, she couldn't kind of haul her duvet over her at night. And we prayed for her at church at five. And it took like three attempts. It kind of went to four, and then it went to one, and then finally it went totally. But the pain is totally gone now, and she was actually able to help a friend move this week as well. So God is good. I could chat about church at five forever, but I won't do. We're going to be looking at Mary and Martha and Lazarus and Jesus tonight. And Georgia is going to come and do our Bible reading. Our Bible reading is split into three parts, just so you're going to get little chunks of it. If you haven't got a Bible on your phone or your tablet, or you haven't got a Bible with you, the hospitality team are going to rush around now. It would be useful to have a Bible. If you don't have a Bible, just come and see me at the end and we'll give you a Bible. It's always good to have a Bible. Please do start at the Gospels, not right at the beginning. Otherwise, you might stop after a couple of books of the Bible because it kind of gets stuck in the middle there. But anyhow, Georgia, why don't you come up and read the first bit of our Bible reading?
Oh, which is also in this handy Bible right here. Okay, are you still fishing for the verse? Oh no, you don't know where we are, do you? Okay, from the top. We are reading from John chapter 11, verse from the beginning at 1. I'm really slow at getting my Bible out and finding, so I'll give you another.
Have they got a page? You want to shout a page number out?
Yep, it's 1017.
Great.
Good? Yep. Okay. Now a man named Lazarus was ill. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay ill, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is ill." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This illness will not end in death. No. It is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you were going back?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk in the daytime will not stumble, for they will see by the world's light. It is when people walk at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us go also, that we may die with him."
Thank you. Now, the eagle-eyed amongst you will have noticed that that reading wasn't on the front of the bulletin. It wasn't because anybody made any mistake. It was just because I wanted to add an extra little bit in there. So we're just starting a little bit earlier than advertised. So Mary, Martha and Lazarus lived in a village which was just a few miles east in Judah called Bethany. And interestingly, when you Google the word Bethany, it translates as house of the poor. And there's evidence that actually that's in fact what it was. That it was a place where the poor and the sick and the needy would be cared for. And Jesus had been there a number of times, which really isn't surprising, is it? Because we know that Jesus had a real affinity with the poor and those in need, which he demonstrated time after time. In his kingdom, the poor would celebrate and the sick would be healed. Just want to pause there for a moment. And I don't know how many of you managed to get to New Wine this summer. Anybody managed to get to New Wine this summer? Yeah? A few of us? There, we had a venue which was all about this. It was all about the poor celebrating and the sick were healed as well. It was a venue for our urban guys, for our inner city and estates guys. And so some of the kind of worship that we experienced there and the great pro-presenter stuff going on there was all part of it as we parted together, as we celebrated God's goodness together. I think maybe we need to, Joshua, get a few lights going and a smoke machine or two. I think that would be really ace, wouldn't it? It'd be really good. In God's kingdom, the poor celebrate and the sick are healed. And if we were to go forward onto chapter 12, we would see that famous story of Mary pouring over really expensive perfume onto Jesus' feet. And you can see why that act of really costly worship didn't go down very well. In understanding that Jesus was that Bethany was a house for the poor, you don't show that kind of extravagance, do you, in a poor house? And yet that's exactly what Mary did. But our story today finds Mary and Martha sending for their friend Jesus because their brother Lazarus is seriously ill. But Jesus didn't drop everything and run. No, he waited 2 days. So what was he doing for those 2 days over in the wilderness on the other side of the River Jordan to where they wanted him to be? Was he a bit worried about what would happen if he went back there? After all, we read that last time he went back there, he got stoned. Or at least they tried to stone him. Or was he waiting and praying? Was he waiting and praying for his friend Lazarus? Was he waiting and praying for Mary and Martha? He must have been praying too for wisdom and guidance. What to do kind of next in his ministry? After all, if he raised Lazarus from the dead, then this would be the most powerful sign yet of who he was and what he'd come to do. And indeed, it was the nail in the coffin, so to speak, because if we read to the end of chapter 11, we see that Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead was the main reason that the authorities wanted him dead. Mary and Martha must have been wondering what on earth their friend Jesus was doing. Why he hadn't come to heal their brother Lazarus. Why would he let him die? Why was he treating them like this? After all, they were meant to be friends. Jesus' timing must have felt very, very wrong. to Mary and Martha. And Jesus' timing can often feel very, very wrong for us too. As most of you know, we live in Strawberry Vale, which is the best place to live in the world. And we used to live at 24 Stable Walk, and the plan was that the church were going to do a loft extension to give us an extra room because we got far too many children. And but Peabody, in their wisdom, said no. They're the people who own the whole estate. And so we were like, you know, God, what is going on here? And so I just asked around my mates who are on the kind of community committee as well, does anybody know of a five-bedroomed house? Because there are a few on the estate, but most of them are still owned by Peabody and rented out. So does anybody know of a five-bedroom property going on the estate? And they said, well, it hasn't come up on the market yet. But Rita said, my mum is selling her five-bedroom property. Oh, where's that? I said. Oh, two doors down from your house, they said. Number 6, 26 Stable Walk. Now, that must have been God's provision. And you would have thought things would have just rolled on nicely. Within a few weeks or a few months, we would have been in there and it would have all been absolutely wonderful. The only problem was that 24 had to be sold before 26 could be bought. And we have viewing after viewing after viewing after viewing after viewing. And they always wanted to view it on a Saturday, which is my day off and our day with the family. And we've got, as I said, we've got way too many kids in a small house. So they just make the place look cluttered. Even if they're just sitting there still, they still make the place look cluttered. And so we used to have to send them out on a Saturday. And, you know, what was God doing? Why did we have to wait and wait and wait and wait? I thought that I had got a brilliant idea. If, you know, if God had too much on his plate, then I would help him out a bit. So I decided, and very prayerfully decided, that I would buy a lottery ticket. I didn't want a huge amount of money. I didn't want a million because, well, now it wouldn't be so bad. We could use it with Go and Grow. But anyhow, I just wanted enough to buy the house. Because I wasn't trusting in God. I wasn't trusting in God's timing. I thought I'd make it happen myself. Now, I don't advise you to go out there and buy lottery tickets. I am against the lottery because I actually see the poor spending an awful lot on the lottery, that they're putting their hope in it. But I would take some lottery money for the estate. Let's have that back and use it for kingdom purposes. We had to wait, though, because the people that God had to move in 24, well, things had to move and change in their life. So John and Emma Hodge and their two girls had joined our team down at Strawberry Vale and were really, really keen to move onto the estate. And they'd got a flat, an ex-council flat in Muswell Hill. And they looked at 24, they really wanted to move in, but they did their sums and there was just no way that they could do it. But after all that clearing up of the house and all that showing of the house for must have been nearly a year, the market started to move. And interestingly, the market where they were started to move quicker than the market in Strawberry Vale because they were a little bit more pucker than us. Not much, but a little bit more pucker. And so their property went up in price where 26 didn't go up in price. And then John got a promotion at work. And actually, they were then able to buy 24 from us. God is amazing. I wouldn't want anybody else living in 24. To be able to have another family living on the estate, part of our team, is absolutely amazing. God's timing was perfect. My timing was rubbish. And the way I tried to force God's hand in it was really, really rubbish too. Do you know, we've had a bit of that with our aspiration, our hope to move the high road. Do you know, I've been at St. Bees for over 25 years. I've been on staff for over 20 years. And I think that throughout that time, you know, there's always been a push to get up to the high road. Could we use this site? Could we use that site? What about this? What about that? But every door has closed. Nothing has happened before. But God's timing is right, and God's timing is good. And actually, Solar House has come about, and it is bigger and more extraordinary than we could have ever imagined. The ministry that's going to happen in that place is utterly amazing. And where God has placed us in this time, with all of those new properties going in, right next door, right over the road, and down the road a bit, who could have wanted for a better place? God's timing is perfect. Let's hear the... Where's she gone? Ah, there you are. Let's hear the next little bit of our story.
Okay, so from verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she told him. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who was to come into the world.
Thanks. You can imagine it, if only. If only Jesus had got there sooner. If only Jesus hadn't have waited. If only he just got there. If only. The problem with if onlys are if onlys look to the past. They want to change the past so that the present will be changed, and therefore the future will be changed. We all do it, don't we? If I spent a little more time on studying, then my exam results would have been better. If only I hadn't bought that new phone, then I wouldn't be eating baked beans for the rest of the week. If only I hadn't said those words, then we wouldn't have split up. If onlys are fantasies. They're fantasies about what could have been. However, Jesus was offering something very different to Martha. He was not going back to rewrite history like some Back to the Future movie. No, what Jesus was about to do was bring God's future into the present. Jesus invites Martha to put her faith in him. Your brother will rise again, he says. He's talking about what is just about to happen. But Martha thinks that he's talking about the resurrection of the dead on the last day. And to be honest, that couldn't have been much comfort to her, could it? In the rawness of that moment. But the resurrection and the life was standing right there in front of her. Not just God himself coming down from heaven to earth, but the future coming into the present. God's kingdom that was to come, coming into the present. It wasn't the doctrine of the resurrection. It wasn't the event of the resurrection. No, the resurrection and life was standing there right in front of her. "Do you believe this?" Jesus asked Martha, daring her to put her faith and her trust in him. I wonder if at that moment, whether Martha's "if onlys" changed to "if Jesus is." If Jesus is who I believe he is. If Jesus is the Messiah, the promised one. If Jesus is God's own son. If Jesus is the resurrection in person. Martha was the active one. Mary was the quieter one. So it's no surprise at all that it's Martha that we find confronting Jesus about what's happened. But I guess the question is, what do we do when life's tragedies strike us? Do we ignore Jesus? Are we so annoyed with him, we're so angry with him, we're so disappointed or upset with him that we can't even bear to look at him? Or do we take a leaf out of Martha's book and confront Jesus face to face, telling him exactly what we think, telling him about all our if onlys? But once we've done this, once we've told him all of our if onlys, we have to wait and we have to listen face to face with Jesus, just as Martha was, face to face with the resurrection and life himself. As he brings his kingdom into the now, giving us a new hope, giving us a new perspective. I've got to be honest that as I prepared this talk and sat at my kitchen table, I had to do a lot of this. I do a lot of if only gods, why God, I'm meant to be your friend God. Ever since we've moved into Strawberry Vale, my husband's health has got worse and worse and worse. And I regularly just shout at God and say, why? If only. But as I bring my realness and my rawness and my honesty and my anger to him, I have to be with him face to face with a resurrection and life. I can't just go, bleh, Jesus, and just not listen to what he has to say to me. Because when I stop and I listen face to face with the resurrection of life, I get a new perspective. I get a new hope. He reminds me that we've never as a family known God's provision in the way that we have in this time of our life. He reminds me that actually day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, I have never known the nearness of God in this way. He reminds me, if I sit there long enough, that actually he is glorified even through Mark's ill health. Because where we live, there are a lot of people with a lot of serious long-term health problems. But Mark walks through them differently, and we as a family walk through them differently, and God is glorified. And if I'm really, really brave and I stay face to face with him long enough, he reminds me that I am called to share in his sufferings. but I will also share in his glory. She's going to have the final bit of our Bible reading now.
Verse 28. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man from dying?"
I want to give you a bit of a spoiler. If you're new to this Christianity malarkey and new to the Bible, don't worry. It's a bit like EastEnders. It's okay. He comes back to life. Woo! It's like Den Watts all over again. Now, most of you are far too young to remember that storyline, but there you go. Don't worry. If you are new to the Bible, have a read on It's All Right. It ends up wonderful in the end and glorious. So, they're kind of at, they're part of what we see here is kind of part of the funeral. And how we do funerals today, there is a real cultural divide. In much of the world, people mourn still today as they did in Jesus' time, very publicly and in community, unlike us Westerners, who mourn in a very private and personal way. But however we grieve, when we're around those who are grieving, we grieve as well. Not only just for the immediate loss, but it also stirs up grief in us and brings grief up in us. And Jesus would have been confronted with a sea of grief as Mary arrives with her neighbours and her friends who were grieving. And in that context, we read the shortest and perhaps most profound verse in the whole Bible. John 11, verse 35. Jesus wept. And people often talk about this verse being profound because it shows Jesus' humanity. But I want to let us look again at that verse in the light of the beginning of John's Bible. John's Bible, John's Gospel even. It's late. I should be in bed by now. So John 1, verse 1 to 3. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God from the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made." So what we're seeing here is the Word weeping like a baby because the death of his friend. He is not some high and dry God, far removed. No, this is the creator of the world weeping for his friend. What does that tell us about the nature of God? This is God himself. Isaiah 53 verse 4 says, "Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows." Jesus didn't come riding into Bethany on a white charger and saying, "Do not fear, for I am here. I will resurrect him to life." No, Jesus came and he wept with his friends, Mary and Martha. What does Jesus weep over now? What does Jesus weep over in our world? What does Jesus weep over in our communities? What does Jesus weep over in our lives? Jesus weeps with us. You can only imagine some of the grief that was stirred up in Jesus as he met Mary and Martha and that whole community grieving. The grief of the loss of his friend, but also he must have been feeling the grief of what was about to happen. He must have felt the grief almost of his own death. This story points us forward to Jesus' death. As the gathering mourners say to each other, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Heard something like that before? What about what they said about Jesus as he hung on the cross? He saved others. Why can't he save himself? But Jesus had to share in the common fate of the world to save it. The story points again to what is about to come. This time Jesus asks, where have you laid him, about Lazarus? But very, very soon, Mary would be asking the angels at the tomb. They've taken my master, and I don't know where they've laid him. And as the crowd answered Jesus, come and see where Lazarus is laid. Those words are the words that Philip used right at the beginning of Jesus' public ministry. Come and see. Come and see the one who's been promised. Come and see the one who's been prophesied. So as Josh and the band come back up, I just want to finish this evening in asking a question. Will we join Mary and Martha and Jesus in this story? Now, this doesn't apply for you if you have no brokenness in your life, if you have no scars, if life hasn't dealt you a rum deal in any way, if you are completely sorted, please feel free to go and get a cup of coffee at this point, because this doesn't apply to you, but it applies to most of us. Won't you just close your eyes for a moment?